It's just a pleasure to welcome back to the show, to GoldSeek.com Radio, Dr. Mark Faber, the editor and publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. Welcome, Dr. Faber.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your program.
It's always a pleasure. I'd like to begin the discussion today, if we could, with last week's announcement. Two new Fed heads appointed at the Federal Reserve with a dovish stance. Plus, we hear that Christine Lagarde will soon take over the helm at the European Central Bank. This would seem to bode well for the precious metals markets, as these are folks that favor inflationary policies. I'd like your thoughts, please.
Well, I'd like to make following statement. I think that whoever joins the central bank, and usually they have a recommendation by other central bankers, and or they are sponsored by the government. So whoever is in those positions, whether it's the ECB or the Bank of Japan, the Fed, or they're responsible for fiscal policies, is basically an interventionist and not a believer in free markets, and expansionist in terms of monetary and fiscal policies. So yes, what you just said is correct. They are all one way or the other money printers, or they believe that they are smarter than the market and that they should intervene in free market with fiscal and, as I just mentioned, monetary policies. And by the way, Mr. Trump is the ultimate interventionist who believes that he knows everything and can essentially impose tariffs on other people with a desirable outcome, which usually is not the case.
Of course, it's a tax, isn't it, on the working and middle classes. It imposes higher costs on goods typically across the board. And we don't always know the reverberations, the impact of government actions down the road on the economy. There's some talk that the Smoot-Hawley Act and related tariffs had an impact on the Great Depression.
Well, it may not have been that the Smoot-Hawley tariffs caused the depression, but for sure, they aggravated the downturn because global trade had begun to shrink already, but it was then aggravated by the Smoot-Hawley tariffs. And the same, global trade, if we measure global trade as a percentage of global GDP, it peaked out in the year 2008, and has been trending down. But now with the Trump tariffs that are very arbitrary, and now with the trade spat between Japan and South Korea, I think the global economy is going to, I think it will tank. In other words, it will contract.
You're then predicting a couple of quarters of back-to-back slowing GDP, probably not just domestically, but globally. And this, of course, would trigger the recessionary signals. Don't we see signs of this, though, 6 months in advance in equities market? Do you feel that's reflecting or paralleling your forecast?
Well, I think when you print money, you can argue, well, the Fed doesn't print money. In fact, they're reducing the balance sheet. But the fact is that the Europeans are still expanding the balance sheet, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, and the Bank of England, and so forth. So globally, they're still money printing. And that money that is printed overseas can flow into U.S. assets and boost the prices of U.S. assets. To answer the question is, in the current environment of money printing, that distorts very badly free markets, it may not be easy to spot the recession right away. But if you look at some statistics like car sales or new orders for trucks or global exports or global PMIs, and so forth. All these indicators are down. So I think we are already in many sectors of the economy in recession. And I think it will become worse as the year progresses.
It's a mantra we've heard now for a decade from over U.S. equities, which is still the primary focus of most investors here in North America, especially maybe Europe. On the other hand, we've had folks like yourself who aren't so confident things can continue. Obviously, some alternatives. We know the safe haven asset. We've discussed that for 14 years on GoldSeek.
Well, outline exactly how it will play out is difficult to tell because, you understand, we have to assume that governments are lying and they will maybe hide the recession. As you know, in the U.S., and as you kind of pointed out just now, we have a two-tier economy with the asset holders, especially the large asset holders that own large tracts of real estate and equities and so forth. They've done very well, whereas the typical household in the U.S. hasn't done well. But I just read an article about Switzerland, and this is the guy who is a consultant and talks to a lot of companies and a lot of individual entrepreneurs. He said, or wrote, that the common theme of these entrepreneurs, whether these were lawyers or doctors or engineers and so forth, the common theme was that compared to 20 years ago, they all earned less money in real terms. And this I thought was very interesting because Switzerland, its economy, has done relatively well, I'm saying relatively well, and that even in Switzerland, it's visible that the typical household is not doing as well as 20 years ago. And if you look at France and at other countries in Europe, there is a reason why the typical household and the typical voter is unhappy. Because economically he hasn't done well, period. And so I believe that we are headed into a period where even if they print money, even if they intervene with fiscal measures and don't make a mistake, say you just mentioned Mrs. Lagarde before, she is the quintessential elitist bureaucrat. She was finance minister. But these charges were then kind of miraculously dropped. Just as Jeffrey Epstein's charges were miraculously dropped. You know, we live in a system where some people can do certain things and other people can't. And anyway, these people, they will then eventually propose a wealth tax. After, of course, having hidden their money into some instruments such as foundations and some charitable institutions, which will be tax-free. You understand? So that the wealth tax will fall on the kind of medium-sized asset holder, whereas the very rich, the 0.01% and the 0.001%, they will not pay these taxes. And this is the outcome that I see happening. And economically, the government can then still show some economic growth in nominal terms, when in real terms, the standards of living of people will continue to deteriorate for the majority. But of course, for people like Mrs. Lagarde, who doesn't pay any tax anyway, because she worked for, she worked for the IMF, tax-free, and I suppose the ECB, they don't pay any tax to the employees either. So we have this elitist standard where the establishment actually is not even elected, but they run the country according to their own will and frequently against the will of the majority of people.
You might think of it as Adam Smith's reverse invisible hand, the inflationary burden that we all bear due to profligacy in the fiscal policies as well as monetary. It's ironic because on the one hand, we have this remarkable technological and productivity renaissance all throughout societies around the world. One would think that the standard of living would follow along with those advancements and that progression. However, we also are dealing with the nominal versus real income, and that seems to deteriorate and erode our standard of living. I'm sure you have further commentary, perhaps on the U.S. domestic situation and, of course, our neighbors in China and Europe.
Well, I just like to say that in the U.S., the public is, of course, informed by the government and by essentially the establishment about China, and usually they are misinformed. I mean, we just discussed this falling incomes and so forth. To this, I just like to add that actually in the world, if you look at it in the last, say, 30 years, in the Western world, the standards of living haven't gone up, or for the majority of people. For the very rich, it has, but for the majority of people, it hasn't. But in emerging economies, and especially in China, I can say that the standards of living have gone up for, say, 95% of the people over that period of time. So some people have made relative progress, and others have essentially had a relative decline. That is correct, and that Mr. Trump has identified. But I don't think he understands what the solution to this problem is. And in order to actually address find the solution, one would have to analyze precisely what caused the relative decline of the Western world vis-a-vis, say, countries like India and China. And then we have to analyze by how much have Western governments as a percentage of the economy increased over the last 50 years or so. And if you go in an economic system from, say, 100 years ago, in 1913, none of the European economies had government expenditures of more than, say, 13% as a percent of the economy. And now all European governments have government expenditures of something like 50% as a percent of the economy. Switzerland is somewhat better at 38%. And the U.S. is hovering, who knows where you live, you know, because you have to add also your local tax to the whole tax bill. But it's a, for some people, it's close to 50% taxation as a percent of their income. And statistically measured government expenditures, in other words, federal, state, and municipal, is approximately 41% of the economy. And as governments grow, economic growth slows down. Equally, as regulation grows, economic growth slows down. So these are the causes. Trump, he recognized that the regulation is excessive, so he's cut the regulation. That he's done well. The rest, in my opinion, he hasn't done particularly well. And in particular, I think the trade war will have a negative impact on global economic growth.
We share your sentiments here at GoldSeek.com Radio. Difficulties and the potential issues resulting from these tariffs, that whenever force is required to maintain the status quo within the economic community, especially in global trade and whatnot, it's risky. Are you concerned at all by the potential, if we have this global slowdown that you're anticipating in the next year or two, how deep of a recession? Are we looking at a great recession circa 2008, 2009, or something different this time?
Well, I think that it could be a longer recession, because the last recession was very deep, but it didn't last very long. And countries, especially China, were in a position to actually bail out the global economy, in the sense that the Western economies collapsed as a result of a financial crisis. The central banks then came in and bailed out the system. Well, they bailed out certain people. They didn't bail out the majority of people, but some people were bailed out. But the emerging economies were in a relatively good shape because they didn't have a lot of debt. Nowadays, this is different. Emerging economies are more indebted, and in particular, Chinese economies, highly indebted. So I'm not sure the Chinese economy would be in a position to bail out the world as it was in 2008, 2009. And so the recession could be quite lengthy. And in that situation, the Fed and other central banks would do precisely the same they've always done. They'll print money, you understand? And because there is not that much visible inflation, there is more inflation if we measure, if we define inflation as an increase in consumer prices. There's more than the government statistics would show, but not that much. I mean, it's not like the 70s where prices really went up a lot. But what has really gone up a lot are asset prices. We have the asset inflation. And this money printing that I would expect in the recession, in a forthcoming recession, I'm not sure it will lift asset prices. Who knows? But it may lift some asset prices. I mean, a likely candidate would be that it would lift, say, precious metals, and that it would depress the U.S. dollar. I think this is a kind of a conclusion that one could make. But nothing is for sure. Maybe the money printing will lead to more consumer price inflation at some point and rising interest rates. So all these things we don't know for sure. The only thing we know for sure is that the markets are manipulated. We have $12 trillion worth of bonds internationally that have negative interest rates. It's quite an unusual situation. And we had a huge treasury bond rally until just recently. We had also a huge recovery in bitcoins. And we had some recovery in the precious metals prices, but not much relative to other assets. So my recommendation is essentially it will end badly. We don't know exactly how badly it will end. And it will end badly with a huge boom in precious metals, or whether people will move into cash or outside the U.S. dollars into cryptocurrencies. We all don't know that, but I think to assume that stocks and bonds will continue to rally forever is a very dangerous assumption.
It's interesting you'd mention that because the typical investor today, the financial advice even from the top, usually involves the wisdom and the safety, portfolio balancing aspects, stocks and bonds. What we find ourselves in is a world where virtually every paper asset has a surprisingly high correlation to U.S. dollars. In fact, I think you could argue that many of the currency pairs, with maybe the exception of some global stocks, have such a high correlation to the U.S. dollar that puts even some of the institutions and pension funds, which comprise the bulk or a huge portion of the funds out there, at risk. Any thoughts on the importance of diversification? As you know, our bread and butter, the precious metals. What other alternatives do you think investors have?
Well, I mean, I'm an advocate of diversification. So I think that people should own some stocks and some cash and bonds and some real estate and some gold and maybe some cryptocurrencies. Now, the issue is really if there is a widespread asset deflation, in other words, a collapse in asset prices, then everything could go down. You understand? So you could have stocks going down, real estate, and some real estate has gone down a lot. High-end properties, they're being marked down significantly because nobody can afford the maintenance of these high-end properties due to extortionist property taxes that are levied by local governments. And at the same time, you could have also bonds going down. It's a possibility. I'm not saying it will happen, but it's a possibility. And you could have art prices collapse and so forth and so on. So the way we had in the Depression years, a general decline in the price level of consumer prices, we could have in the next serious downturn, a collapse of asset prices. And then maybe stocks will go down 80% and some stocks may only go down 50% and some real estate may go down only 20% and other real estate may go down 60% and so forth and so on. You don't know, but as an asset holder, it could be that everything will go down. And what doesn't go down will be taken away from you through wealth taxes.
What you're referring to seems to be a temporary deflationary period where there's very few hiding places for investors. The amount of global leverage and the enormous amount of paper money. This would seem to be a very socially challenging period you're outlining.
Well, I think there could be unrest everywhere, you understand, because we not only had asset inflation, say, in one geographical area, we had it globally. And as you know, there's a big discussion about wealth inequality. Most people don't understand what caused the wealth inequality. They just point the finger at rich people and say, well, we are not doing well because these rich people have done well. But the cause is really money printing. And this has taken place everywhere in the world. Now, in some jurisdiction, the money printing has actually lifted the boats of everybody. In other words, in China, even poor people became more affluent as a result of wage increases in real terms, and the super rich have become immensely rich, but everybody has advanced. Whereas in the Western world, I'd say maybe 60% of people haven't advanced in the last 30 years. In fact, there are statistics that show that millennials at the age of 35 have less money and earn less in real terms than the boomers had and earned at the age of 35. So the case can be made, this is an unusual period in the history of capitalism where a generation is less affluent than the previous generation. A difficult social environment, as you pointed out, and as you know, in the U.S., maybe about half the people, they would like to have more socialism, about the socialism BS. If you group the population in men and women, the men are less likely to want socialism and the women want more socialism. 60% of women want more socialism, whereas only about 40% of men want more socialism.
Even just a rudimentary review of how these crack-up booms and inflationary busts have played out. I mean, just as our founders here were terrified of inflationary breakdowns because they'd seen what had just occurred in Paris, you know, really for 100 years, the difficulties that followed. And then, of course, we have a strong man that comes in, you know, Napoleon. Our ancestors are really warning us, beware of what's coming here today. Would you like to tell people more about the Gloom, Doom, Boom report?
Well, I have two reports, a printed version, which is called the Gloom, Boom, and Doom report, and then I have a website report. Both reports are published once a month, and information is available under gloomboomdoom.com. I repeat, gloomboomdoom.com. But I think we have to think about these issues, and the government, they will not want to give up their privileges, and so they will try to keep the system alive for as long as possible to the detriment of the majority of citizens.
Yes, indeed, and you've given us an adequate panacea, I think, today. Thank you so much, Dr. Mark Faber.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. Goldseek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity Craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly, just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Many Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share, with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion
By 2021, Many Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Many Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Many Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange and in the US MENEF. Remember to sign up to Many's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Many Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.